Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It offers flexible spending capacity that adapts to your business. You can also earn up to $395 in annual statement credits on eligible purchases at select business merchants. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
This is episode number 1132 with Olympic gold medalist and world champion Lindsey Vonn.
Welcome to the School of Greatness. My name is Lewis Howes, former pro athlete turned lifestyle entrepreneur. And each week we bring you an inspiring person or message to help you discover how to unlock your inner greatness. Thanks for spending some time with me today. Now let the class begin.
Amit Ray once said, "Everyone has the fire, but the champions know when to ignite the spark." And Tim Fargo said, "Who you are tomorrow begins with what you do today." My guest today is Lindsey Vonn, who is the most decorated American ski racer in history and is widely regarded as one of the greatest of all time. She entered the international skiing scene in 1999 at the age of 14 and has captivated the world with her perseverance and superhuman abilities on the slopes ever since. She's won 4 World Cup overall championships, the gold medal in downhill at the 2010 Winter Olympics, the first one for any American woman, and many more incredible awards. Lindsey is also a New York Times bestselling author of her 2016 debut novel, Strong is the New Beautiful, Embrace Your Natural Beauty, Eat Clean, and Harness Your Power, and has served as an International Games Ambassador in the 2018 Winter Olympics, and is also the founder of the Lindsey Vonn Foundation, which supports girls through scholarships, education, and athletics. And in this episode, we discuss the most influential person in Lindsey's life and how she's dealt with self-doubt over the years. Also, what life after her incredible ski racing career has been all about, how to bounce back from tragedy, the key habits for success and happiness, and so much more. And if you're inspired by this episode at any moment, make sure to text a few friends the link or share it over on social media. Go to lewishouse.com/1132 for the full show notes as well. Okay, in just a moment, the one and only Lindsey Vonn.
Welcome back, everyone, to the School of Greatness. Very excited about our guest. We have the inspirational Lindsey Vonn in the house. I'm so excited you're here. I was telling you before, it's always great having the greatest of all time in their field. And you're the greatest downhill skier of all time. And it's exciting to have you here. We have some mutual friends, which I'll share more afterwards. But I'm excited to learn about your mindset, because it's always fascinating to me the way people think who get to the top. And as a former professional football player and USA handball player, I was never at your level. I never made the Olympics, but I was able
You're still professional, so.
But I was able to train. I was able to train hard, and I was able to get to a certain level, but not to the level you're at, which is inspiring. So I'm curious. I'm always curious about the most influential person in your life growing up, because I think that has a big influence in our life. So who was the most influential person, and what was the greatest lesson they taught you?
Well, I mean, the person that really inspired me was Peekaboo Street, because she was like the only person mm-hmm. that we had really in skiing at that time that was like, you know, really in the spotlight.
Yeah.
And I met her at an autograph signing in Minnesota.
You were 10, right?
Nine. And so like as soon as I met her, I was like, that's what I want to be.
Really?
Yeah, because I mean, I skied for fun before that. And I mean, I trained and all this stuff and I loved ski racing, but I never really had a concrete goal until I saw her. And then, you know, it was suddenly an attainable goal.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, I ended up being on the Olympic team with her in 2002. And she said the only thing that she didn't say much to me, because I mean, I kind of followed her like her shadow, and she was probably pretty annoyed because I was, you know, 16. But she said, you know, I asked her when she was inspecting, I said, "What are you looking at?" And she said, "I'm trying to find the fall line." And I said, "Well, where is the fall line?" She's like, "You have to figure that out yourself." It's like an instinctual thing. And so I always thought about that, and it stuck with me. But yeah.
You mean when you're inspecting the
course. The course. Like you always look at the course and you find your line, right? And, you know, I was like, I'm just like, what are you, you know, I just want to pick her brain because she, you know, she was my idol. So I'm like, what are you doing?
She wouldn't really teach you that, though. She was kind of
She didn't really want to teach me that. I like, you know, try to force it out of her, but it was a good piece of information nonetheless.
When was the first time you beat her?
I actually don't think I did because, oh no, I might have beaten her in some of the World Cups that year, but she retired after the 2002 Olympics.
Mm.
So I didn't really get a chance to race against her very much.
She went out on top, at least top of her game, I guess.
Yeah, definitely above me.
Right.
Yeah.
And she was like, this girl's coming for me, so I might as well get out while I can.
Yeah, I mean, she had similar to me, she had a lot of injuries, and she was just kind of the same thing, like beaten up, so.
Right. What do you think made you such an instinctual, dominant athlete? Where did the mindset come from, like, needing to, or the desire to win all the time at the highest level?
I don't know. I'm a really competitive person, and I'm always kind of like, I'm like a perpetual one-upper.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's like I think one of the things that most people said about me is when I started to succeed, they said, well, you know, now she's got this, she's going to, you know, relax and it's not going to happen again. And that's the exact opposite way that I think, you know, I'm like, if I get this, then I need to get this. And if I get this, I need to get that. And then just kind of like, I always try to get better and better because that's the fun of a challenge, you know, and I think as time went on, too, that I started to hit these, you know, marks of, you know, records, and that then excited me. And then, you know, it's just like finding constant motivation in becoming better.
Right. Did you ever doubt yourself?
There's only one time I doubted myself. I was right after the Olympics.
Which one?
2002. I was still young, you know, so I was
17, 18,
and I just, you know, I kind of got demoted from the ski team. I was on, like, the you know, Europa Cup team, which is one level below, and I was kind of crawling my way back, and, I kept crashing, and I wasn't sure if I was going to make it, and then I just decided to double down on what I was doing. I hired a trainer with money I didn't have. I asked for an advance on my contract. And I spent the whole summer with a new trainer in Monaco, and I got my first podium the next winter.
So when you doubted yourself, how did you get out of it, though? Was it just, let me find people to help me get out of it?
A reset, you know, like, because you get stuck in a rut, and it's like, what I'm doing is not working. So if I need to get to the next level, like, what is there that I can change? You can't change everything, obviously, because then you can't figure out what was wrong. Right. But I needed to find something that I could drastically improve on to get better. And fitness is one thing that I had obviously worked hard at, but not hard enough.
Really?
And so I made that change and it worked.
Now, when you had all these, you had like what? I don't know, so many crashes and injuries, right? Throughout so many years.
A lot, yeah. Just a couple.
I mean, you tore your knees like 50 times. I mean, everything is crazy. You got plates in your arm and your back. I mean, it's nuts. How do you have confidence after a crash and come back and say, well, I'm going to go back and do this course or the next course better, faster, stronger?
Short-term memory.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, it's part of the job,
the concussions, right? I guess, help because you forget.
Yeah. You're like, oh, wait, I don't even remember that. Shoot. Yeah, you know, it's like that's crashing is part of the job description. So like, if you're not ready to do that, then, you know, you should probably not do that. But for me, you know, I always use it as a learning tool. Mm. You know, what did I do wrong? What can I do better? You know, I always analyze my crashes. A lot of people can't watch their crashes because they're like, you know, they don't want
to. It's painful to watch your crashes, especially when you're screaming.
I kind of loved it. I was like, what's my style points?
Oh, my gosh.
And every time my coaches, I would crash, they would stop videoing because they're like, oh, shoot. You know, they stop videoing. I'm like, you have to keep videoing.
Wow.
I want to see the whole thing. And so, yeah, I mean, I just would analyze my crashes, what I do wrong. And you know, I think for me, you have to push the limits in order to find your limit. And I always like wanted to be right up on the limit. And then obviously you go past it sometimes, which you crash and, you know, but if you're not pushing yourself that hard and you're never crashing, you're never going to find your limit. Mm. That's how I think.
But some of these crashes, they would take what? 3 to 6 months to recover, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, so how do you get to the, do you feel like you could have done it without crashing? Or do you feel like you need to crash?
I mean, not for me. That's just kind of how I raced was always 110%.
Yeah.
So I think that's the reason why I was able to be, you know, as successful as I was and downhill for as long as I was. But that's also the reason why I crashed a lot. It's kind of a double-edged sword, but I don't know. I wouldn't change it because I think every injury taught me something.
Yeah.
You know, I think I became a stronger person, maybe not physically, but, you know, mentally I definitely got a lot stronger. And I think when you go through, you know, those kinds of setbacks, you also have a different perspective, you know, and appreciate what you have so much more. So every time, you know, I crashed or I had injuries, I became more hungry to come back because I realize how much I miss it and how much I love it. And, you know, just I wouldn't change it.
Yeah. Can you walk me through when you're going down, right before you're about to go off? What is it called? The
starting gate.
The starting gate.
Yeah.
Right before you're about to go off, what does that 5 minutes before look like in your mind?
I mean, hopefully it's really pretty empty.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, because up until that point, you do all the preparation, right? You know, I've analyzed the course. I've visualized it 1,000 times in my head. I've done all the physical preparation I can do. I've warmed up in the morning. I've warmed up right before I'm in the starting gate. And at that moment, that's when you kind of automatize everything. Like, everything should be automatic. You should be in the starting gate calm and, like, ready to go. Because if you're thinking about, you know, certain things that you could have done,
you're screwed.
Because you have to be so in the moment.
Yeah.
You know, when you're racing at 80 miles an hour, you have to be only thinking about what's right here. You know, if you're thinking about this and that and the other thing, then, you know, that's a dangerous recipe.
Do you know what your fastest speed was ever?
The fastest I've ever been clocked at was 84.
Oh, my gosh.
But, you know, I don't know.
That's so terrifying, been more, right?
The men have gone 100.
That's nuts.
Yeah, it's
you
fun.
Crash on that, you're...
It's awesome.
How do you survive that?
I don't know. Good question. We have, like, back protect. I mean, they have airbags now.
No way. You didn't have that when you were 17, did
no,
you?
No, I wish I did.
Airbags?
Yeah, airbags. So, and your back protector, and, like, if you are inverted in any way, it'll...
Shut up.
Yeah, it's great.
That's amazing technology.
Yeah, I know. It's awesome. I really needed that, like...
20 years.
Yeah.
Now... You said you were 9 when you met your hero, your idol, right? If your 9-year-old self was standing in front of you right now, what would you say in terms of advice to her?
I wouldn't say anything. Because, you know, like, you can't correct the things that you've done in the past. And I think that, you know, again, everything that you experience teaches you something, whether it's good or bad. And so I wouldn't be here if I had done things differently.
Right.
So I wouldn't go back and say, you know, do something differently. I would maybe just say enjoy the ride, you know? That's about it.
Do you feel like you enjoyed it?
Yeah, I did. I mean, I definitely think sometimes I took myself a little too seriously, you know? I mean, but that's also part of it, you know? When you want to be, you know, the best, you have to give up a lot of things and, you know, you can't always enjoy everything as much as everybody else, but, you know, I think it was well worth it.
Yeah. For me, one of the hardest transitions of my life has been from when I was done playing football into what's next in my life.
Yeah.
And you've been transitioning for the last few years now. Has it been hard for you, or do you feel like you've set your brand up so well that it's been easy to kind of move past the sport in a sense?
I mean, I tried as hard as I could to set myself up, you know, and I had plenty of work and plenty of things to do. But, you know, as you know, it's, you know, one day to the next, your life is completely different.
Yeah.
No matter how prepared you are. And it definitely took me until probably, a few months ago.
Really?
Yeah, COVID was the best thing for me because I actually had time to slow down. Because what I do if, you know, I always overwork. So if, you know, there's something going on in my life, no matter what it was, I had skiing. I could always, like, really focus on skiing and kind of, you know, push the other stuff out. And so work is just a great way to band-aid everything as well. And so with COVID, I had to slow down. I had to, like, think about things, like, think about retirement, which was horrible.
When did you officially retire?
February 2019.
Okay. So year before COVID, so almost 2.5 years.
Yeah, so it took me, I mean, the year after, you know, before COVID, it was really hard. And then COVID was like, okay, slow down, think about things, process things, and now I'm finally at, like, a really good place where I'm not, you know, working to, you know, forget that I used to ski race.
Really?
Yeah.
It's weird, huh?
Kind of weird, right?
It's really weird. Now, when your last race was that in February then?
Yeah.
Your last race?
Uh-huh.
When was the last, like, big medal that you won? Because didn't you have, like...
The last race.
That was it? Didn't you have a big crash, like, 5 days before or something, or...
Like, 2 days before.
2 days before. You had a big crash.
Yeah.
Now, Brad Slater asked me to ask you this question, because it was a big crash. This was 2019, huh?
Yeah.
How did you decide to be like, okay, I'm going to come back after demolishing your body?
I mean, there's really no other option.
Not race.
Go big or go home. I didn't want to go home.
Really?
I mean, I don't know. I've always been the person that if I can walk, like if I can be out there, I will be out there. You know, unless you have to, like the doctor physically stops me. Right. You know, I'm
or you can't walk.
Yeah. Right. Like I'm gonna be out there. I mean, I was pretty close to like, you know, not being able to walk at that point because I had torn my LCL, so I was racing with no LCL. I had braces on both knees.
Shut up.
No, it was definitely, I felt like I was being held together by duct tape.
Okay.
And so, like, my last race was literally, I was like, well, this is it. This is all I got. So I'm just going to lay everything on the table and see what happens. And it was hard because I didn't want to crash in my last race. There's no do-overs.
You knew this was going to be your last race.
Oh, yeah. It was.
You're like, I'm done after this.
Yeah,
my body is falling apart.
Yeah. Literally. And so, you know, it was like, there's no do-overs. Is this your last chance? And, I threw down and gave it everything I had, and I, you know, third place.
It's crushing it. So how did you get your mind right, though? Like, I know in your body, you're like, okay, I'm just going to toughen it up and just make it happen. But how did you get your mind right?
Well, I actually talked to my coach that I grew up with in Minnesota the night before my race, and he's like, what is 60 seconds in your whole life?
Wow.
Like, what is 60 seconds? I'm like, wow, that's a really good perspective. I'm like, it's nothing. It's like, exactly, it's nothing. So who cares? Just go. I'm like, all right, yeah. I mean, I that was my mindset anyways, but it just kind of like put everything in perspective in that moment, and he made a great point.
He's 96
years old, and he made a great point.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a great point. Isn't it crazy that, I mean, how many Olympics did you do?
Four.
Four Olympics.
Yeah.
That's nuts.
Just Miss Sochi. That sucked.
Only four times the Olympics. Isn't it crazy that so many athletes, I'm sure you know as well, train decades for 60 seconds, 10 seconds,
yeah,
30 seconds.
It's nuts. And especially, you know, qualifying too. Mm-hmm. You have cold,
right.
You miss your track and field athlete, your competition is 60 seconds, 45 seconds, and you're a little bit off and you're done. Yeah, it's crazy.
A decade, two decades of your life.
Yeah.
Over. How? Luckily, you never had to deal with that because you won a bunch of medals, but how do you think people could deal with that mindset, that mentality of, I give my whole life to something, whether it's a relationship, a career, a project, whatever, a business, and it doesn't work out? How do we bounce back from that?
I mean, it's hard. I think everyone has their own process. Mm-hmm. I always felt like if I worked hard enough, things would turn around. Like whenever I had a really bad moment, I said, you know, the good guy's not going to finish last.
Mm.
You know, I'm going to come back. I just have to double down, you know, reinvest everything in myself and come back. You know, sometimes you just need a little bit of a reset. Sometimes, you know, you need to take a break and come back to it. Sometimes, you know, it's more of just a mind over matter. There's just a lot of different ways to get from point A to point B. But I think the biggest thing is just believing in yourself, which can be very difficult to do, obviously, especially if you have like multiple setbacks in a row. But that's why I always journal.
Really?
You know, I did a lot of journaling from like a general day to day to when I was racing and training. I would write everything down.
Really?
Especially when things are going well.
Hmm.
Because everyone thinks when things are going well, like this is great, it's so easy. And they forget about what they're doing. And then all of a sudden, one day, things aren't going well. Like, how do I get back? You know? So it's good to keep, like, I always kept notes of everything. Like, what runs felt good, what skis felt good, what boots felt good. And then I always had a reference point to go back to.
Was that daily or was that just most days you were doing?
No, daily.
Every day?
I have stacks of books, yeah.
When did you start?
Probably 2005.
So you were, what, like 21 or 23 or something?
Yeah.
Okay. So for...
Like when
13,
I started consistently
years.
Winning, yeah. When I started,
14 years you were like journaling consistently.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. And I also, on and off, I journaled my workouts because that got a little bit excessive. It was like, there's only so much journaling one can do, but I occasionally did do my workouts as well. But
was it more like, here's what I did, here's the feeling I had, here's what worked, what didn't work though?
Yeah. Like every run, you know, I would write down, you know, I tried a different line, it didn't work, I felt good, like this boot felt good. You know, this setup felt good. You know, this felt bad. I tried to do, you know, this line. It didn't work. I just, as much detail as I could give myself, I felt like the better because it's only helping me.
Where do you think you would have been if you never journaled?
I think I would have lost my way a couple times because, you know, looking back definitely gave me confidence. And thinking about, you know, remembering, you know, like how it felt to have a good run and what I was doing in that moment. You know, my own words helped me visualize that, which then translated into me finding my way again. So, you know, I don't know. I feel like...
So you would read back your journals?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
You talked about believing in yourself. How did you learn to believe in yourself consistently with all the setbacks, though? Like, how do you stay in belief when it's like, okay, crash, failure, didn't make the Olympics here, whatever. I'm going through personal struggles in my life, whatever it might be. How do you stay in belief with yourself?
I kind of always went back to, especially when I had multiple injuries, I always went back to, why am I doing this? Mm. You know, I'm doing it because I love it. I'm passionate about it. And, you know, even if I have setbacks, I still am happy every time in the starting gate. So it's kind of like always going back to the root of why I'm there. Yes, I love winning, and that's always what I wanted to do.
Right.
There's no qualms about that. Yeah, but, you know, at the end of the day, you know, when I'm putting myself through everything that I did, you know, all the rehabs and everything, I always remembered I loved it and I wanted to go fast again. Whether I won or lost, I wanted to go fast again.
Wow.
So kind of keeping things in perspective.
Yeah.
Which again is like, you know, one of the reasons why I think being injured, you know, not so many times, but, you know, having injuries is just a good way to have a different perspective on things.
Yeah, and reflect and see, do I still love this or not?
Yeah.
Do I want to keep going?
Yeah.
And it sounded like you did so many times.
Yeah.
How important was mental health for you, you know, throughout your entire career? Because it wasn't really talked about until like the last 5 years, mental health and the importance of self-care and taking care of your mindset. How important was that for you? And do you ever feel like you lost it at times or overwhelmed or stressed or depressed at certain points?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I definitely struggled with depression for a long time, and I
really?
You know, was vocal about it not until.
One of my favorite parts about my job is that I get the opportunity to travel a lot. And in fact, I'm recording this right now while I'm in Mexico. And actually, I was thinking about something that I wanted to share because I get a lot of questions from so many people about different side hustle ideas. So here's one for those of you out there that are on the go a lot like I am or traveling a lot. When you're staying in your Airbnb on your trips, have you ever thought about how you could be making extra money by hosting through Airbnb while your home is vacant? If you're interested in an extra stream of income, Airbnb hosting is an easy place to start, and it's like giving your home some company while you're away. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. When you get a new car or a new home, your first reaction might be to say things like, oh yeah, or I can't believe it, or booyah. But what you really want to say is the one thing that can get you the help you need. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. State Farm is there with the coverage you need for your car, your home, and even boats, motorcycles, RVs, and other things that matter to you. With a State Farm agent, you know someone is there to help you choose the coverage you need. With so many coverage options, it feels good knowing you can find what fits for you. And when you need ways to get help, State Farm gives you options there too, in person or on the phone with your local agent or on statefarm.com, where their award-winning app State Farm lets you do things your way. So when you need help protecting the things that matter most, remember to say, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And it's your last chance to get more fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this limited-time bundle ends June 30th. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
2012 maybe. And at that time, like, you know, no one was talking about it. I hadn't told my parents, like, I didn't tell anybody, and then I just was like, this is something I really need to do. And it definitely helped me kind of process everything and like feel more comfortable about it. But I mean, you know, if being on the road is really hard, you know, you're always
alone.
In a hotel room, I'm always by myself. And, you know, a lot of times, you know, people just see the athletes like on the podium happy and like in the media. But, you know, when the cameras go off, you go back to an empty hotel room, and it can be really, really hard. Again, especially because you're doing it for so long, you know. And at the end of my career, thankfully, I got my dog, Lucy. So she was, like, my companion and always was with me and definitely helped a lot. But it's like the loneliness really gets to you.
It is lonely. If you're training that hard for something, I mean, your team is there, and I'm sure your family are there, but at certain points, you're just alone with the thoughts.
It's isolating.
It's very isolating.
Yeah.
There's not many people that can probably relate to you.
Not really.
You have a couple peers. There's a couple other athletes you can talk to and kind of can understand, your coach maybe, but
then also, you know, it's if you want to talk to somebody about it, they're not really going to have any sympathy for you.
Right.
Because you're doing well.
Because you're making money.
Why are you complaining about something? So you know, success doesn't equal happiness. I mean, everyone says that, like, money doesn't equal happiness. Success doesn't equal happiness. You have to find that, you know, on your own. But, yeah, it's just because you're successful doesn't mean you're happy. And there are definitely a lot of times where I was not happy.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you feel like you're happy now?
Yeah, I'm actually the happiest I've ever been. Yeah.
I love that. Yeah. You do have a great energy about
Thanks,
you right now.
Yeah.
Not that I knew you before, but you have a great energy right about you right now. What brings you the most joy in your life?
I think just waking up every day and being excited about, you know, something new challenges, new experiences, meeting new people. I think, you know, I was so focused on skiing that I had, you know, blinders on and I didn't see, you know, a lot that was around me. And I mean, you have to do that if you want to, you know, be successful.
Best, yeah.
But I get so excited every day because I'm like, what am I going to do today? You know, am I going to wake surfing? Am I going to go mountain biking? You know, all these things that, A, I haven't been able to do just because of my sport.
Right.
And like, B, I just have never experienced. So I'm excited. It's a very exciting time. I'm very, very happy.
So it sounds like it only took you 2 years to kind of transition from the sport to feeling at peace about moving past it now, right?
Yeah.
And kind of letting it go.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty quick, though. Most athletes hold on to a sense of loneliness or depression or the glory days.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I miss it.
Yeah.
And it's easier in the summer because no one's racing.
Right.
You know, like, ask me again in February when the Olympics are going
on. Oh, man.
Yeah. And this past winter was the World Championships in Cortina, which is literally one of my favorite places.
Oh.
And I was commentating for NBC.
Oh, how was that? And commentating.
I commentated I could only do a couple races and I preferred the men because,
oh, right.
You know,
yes,
you know, it's,
you're not like, I could beat these girls right now.
Yeah, exactly. I don't put myself
Let's
in
go.
That position. But you know, it's like, That's I process tough. It as a death, in the, you know, like
oh,
a death,
man.
You know, like it's gone. It's never coming back. Cause the second you think, oh, well, maybe I could do a comeback.
Oh man.
It'll really mess with your mind.
How important has rituals been in your life? Do you do a lot of rituals beyond journaling to... When you said this is like a death, have you ever like put your skis in a coffin and buried it to like allow you to process or something like that?
Yeah, I actually did the opposite. I always had like my Olympic medals in my sock drawer. I never had them out. Like I had like a nice trophy case for my other, you know, trophies, but I never.
And you probably had a whole room for all your trophies. I mean, so many of them.
I had a nice display case in Colorado, but now I moved to Utah, so I don't have there. Literally everything is in storage.
But you got your
Olympic But I have my
Olympic medals.
So my Olympic medals, I for the first time like got my gold medal framed.
Wow.
And I got all my World Championship medals framed.
That's cool.
And it was like, this is a big moment.
Of course.
And it kind of was like, this is what I did. You know what I mean?
It's not what you're doing.
Right.
Ooh.
Because it was kind of like, it's put away now.
Oh,
you know what I mean? Yeah, right?
There's a lot to celebrate, but my heart hurts.
Right?
Gosh.
So it was like, it was an interesting moment to do that. It
wow.
seems weird and, you know, slightly vain, but I just felt like it was like, this is what I did and it's done now. And I can look back and be happy about what I did, but it's not what I do. And it's not who I am, certainly.
Who are you?
I'm just a nice girl from Minnesota.
You're from the Twin Cities, right? Or
yeah.
a small town near there?
Yeah, South of Minneapolis.
I played football in Marshall, Minnesota for a season.
Oh, no way.
And I played in the Metrodome like 4 or 5 times.
Metrodome.
Yeah, it was the old school.
Crazy.
The AstroTurf.
Until I collapsed.
Oh, man, I still have like turf toe from the AstroTurf
oh, yeah.
and the Metrodome.
Yeah.
But it was a good time. I was in Minnesota for 3 months. I came for my freshman year to play football at Southwest Minnesota State. And I left after the winter. I was just like underground tunnels to get the classroom.
Yeah,
I was like, this is nuts. I remember the first day I went to training camp in football in the summer. It must have been in August. I remember stepping on the field, and literally, I've never seen this in my life. The field moved with me every step. Millions of mosquitoes moving with me to the next step. I was like, what am I doing? For weeks, I'm just swatting mosquitoes.
Yeah, mosquitoes is a state bird.
It's crazy.
Yeah, it's gross.
It's probably not as bad in the Twin Cities, but like
it's
in the farmland,
not.
It was nuts.
Yeah. I mean, actually, when I grew up racing, it would be so cold sometimes they wouldn't let us take off our jacket and pants. We would have to race with everything that we had on. It was like my dad would have like the car sitting like ready,
oh my
warmed
gosh.
Up. It would literally go straight through the finish and into the car.
I'm curious about mental health now, because you talked about it when you were lonely and kind of had some depression during the traveling time. What is it like now that you've hung up the awards, that you've gone through different challenges in your personal life, and I'm sure you're having career stuff up and down. What are you doing to stay mentally strong post-career?
Similar things. I started working with a new psychologist, which was really good. He kind of focused on more like athletes and had worked with other athletes that have retired, which was, I think, really helpful.
What's his name?
Dr. Armando. Yeah, he's awesome. And again, worked with a lot of athletes. And he kind of also had a different technique of like processing things, which is really good.
What was the technique?
It's called brain spotting.
Okay.
It's kind of hard to explain, but basically you sit there and you really focus on the thing that really makes you emotional, whatever that is, like retirement or, whatever. Your brain has to actually like process it to be able to like unload it. Otherwise, it's just going to sit there, because he has a theory that, you're like, your body keeps score.
Absolutely.
So any
trauma. It's a great book called The Body Keeps the Score.
Oh, really?
It's amazing. Yeah. It's
called The Body.
It's called The Body. It's called The Body Keeps the Score.
Okay. But it's true.
Physical, emotional trauma. Yeah. It's like stored in the body until you process and heal it.
But he did say that I don't store my trauma from my crashes.
You don't physically or emotionally?
Both. Really? I mean, physically I do, obviously.
Right.
But
you don't keep it emotionally?
No. I don't know.
How'd you do that?
I don't know. Short-term memory?
Concussions.
Well, no. I always watch my video. I always, I processed it. I was like, this is what I did. This is what I need to do better. And I just moved on. The more you don't address it, the more it becomes a problem.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. So he was like one of the best things that happened to me.
Really? And brain spotting.
Yeah.
So you think about the moment of sadness or pain or frustration or...
Yeah. Like the emotional trauma or whatever it is that, is really causing you, anxiety or emotional,
frustration or sadness.
Yeah.
So you think about it. How long do you think about it for? What's the process then?
It could be a couple hours, he usually comes to my house for a few days and like we have good, sessions and kind of work when we have time, when we can. Mm-hmm. And, it's really different, but it's really great. He's awesome. You should look him up.
I'm going to check him out.
Yeah.
So what happens at the end of the 30 to 60 minutes when you're thinking about, are you supposed to put your attention on the feeling, on the event?
Everything. And then, like visualizing what happened, how you feel. The more you think about it, it's weird. I start, with something that's emotional and it's very triggering. And then by the end, it becomes less triggering. Mm. And then by the end, it's like, okay.
You let it go.
Yeah.
It's when we resist something where it continues to kind of fester and be suppressed inside of us. But the more we actually pay attention to it.
Yeah.
And go through different scenarios and process it, then we can let it go.
Yeah.
It's not as scary anymore.
Right.
Right. So brain spotting, what's another strategy you've used to help?
Surrounding myself with people that, really support me and for me who I am, like my sister and my family and like really good friends. I have a very small group of friends, I travel all the time. I have a crazy lifestyle. But I have really like a couple of friends that I grew up with in Minnesota since I was 7 years old, and like we're solid. And it's just, spending time with those quality people, allowing yourself to be you, and not having, any fear of judgment. I think that really helps, be yourself, and then be around other people is easier.
Did you feel the fear of judgment when you were competing ever?
Not really. I think when I was competing, I had the most confidence.
Really?
I felt like on any given day, if I was healthy, I could win. It was totally different than what I am in like real life.
Really?
Yeah, so kind of like the exact opposite.
In competing mode, you were super confident.
Yeah.
I'm talking about, but then you walk off.
I kind of like harnessed all of my confidence that I ever had, and I put it right in skiing.
Okay, but you're saying you weren't as confident in your normal life outside of competing?
No, not really, yeah.
What did that look like?
I'm like more shy, like I'm not really, I'm like, I feel like I'm more, right now this is like media mode.
Yeah.
Which is still me, but I'm just, I don't know, it's different when I'm at home or like I'm at a dinner or I'm at a function. I'm not the person
you're
that's
chill.
Like overly, talking to people. I'm like, I hang back. And I wait for someone to come to me. Like,
interesting.
I don't know. That's
well, the next time I'm at an event with you, I'll make sure to come up to you. I'll give you a hug.
I'm
and say, what's up,
Lizzie? I swear. I'm not like trying to be my, some people think that I'm just, they don't want to come say hi. And I'm not trying to be, negative. I just, shy in my corner.
Do you feel like you've been able to translate that confidence into your life now? Or do you feel like there are more times where
it took me a while.
Really?
But yeah, I feel like finally I've kind of spread out the confidence.
Really?
So it's not, you know, solely in one place, but it's like, you know, sprinkled everywhere.
What do you do on a daily basis to build confidence?
Honestly, I think working out is one of the best things that's happened
greatest.
To me. Yeah. I thought for a while, you know, I don't want to work out. I'm retired.
Really?
I want to, you know, enjoy it because I've been working out my entire life. And I stopped working out. I'm like, wow, I really feel like, you know, like I felt miserable. And then I got back into it. And the more I did it, the better I felt.
Right.
And so now it's like I prioritize working out because it makes me feel so much better. And I like working out first thing in the morning because then it sets my day up for success. And I feel confident and, you know, better and clear-minded. And it's awesome.
It's the greatest feeling ever.
Yeah.
And when you can look yourself in the mirror completely naked, stripped down, and be like, at least I'm proud of the process. Maybe I'm not proud of the result right now. But I'm proud of like showing up for myself today. That feels good.
Well, I feel like no matter how you look, as long as you like you're putting your best effort forward. Like when
Absolutely.
I work out, you know, 6 days a week, you know, and like the scale says something other than what I feel like I put in. Like I mean, sometimes it still bothers me, but you know, I feel like that's not a testament to you know the effort that I felt like I gave, and also like how that made me feel from a confidence perspective. And so you always got to keep that in mind. It's really more about. I don't know. I feel like it's more about mental.
Absolutely. Mental confidence.
Yeah.
Than physical confidence.
Yeah.
What would you say are the non-negotiables? You've been living this life for a while now at a top level. 20 plus years you've been competing and now transitioning. What would you say are the non-negotiables, 3 to 5 things that have helped you become successful and that will help you to continue to be successful? If you had 3 to 5 habits or things that you must do, non-negotiable in your life to support your success, what would those be?
I mean, work ethic is general, but at the same time, you know, if you want to succeed at anything that you're doing in life, you know, you have to be willing to put in the work.
Yeah.
You know, and make those sacrifices. Because I honestly feel that the most successful people aren't the most talented. They're not the smartest.
Mm-hmm.
They're the people that are willing to go the extra mile that the other people are not. What else? I think, you know, rituals are habits that, you know, help you, you know, get to the place where you can work hard. So whether that's working out or, again, journaling or going on a walk or, you know, meeting your friend once a week or whatever it is, you know, finding habits, like healthy habits like that, you know, put you in a mental place that allows you to then work harder and again, then be more successful.
Right.
And then surround yourself by people that believe in the same things that you do. So that will help, you know, facilitate your success and not bring you down. You know, I think it is oftentimes really hard to actually find people that want you to succeed.
Really?
I think.
Mm-hmm. Why is that, you think?
That's just human nature, I think.
Or jealous or...
Yeah, I mean, and honestly, I haven't experienced that a lot, but sometimes it like creeps up on you and you're like, wow, you really didn't want me to succeed.
Really?
Yeah, so it's just kind of...
Like people you've hired on your team or friends or peers?
No, my internal team, we're tight. You know, they've been with me since I was 16.
Wow.
I'm a very loyal person. Like we're a very tight-knit group and I like to keep it that way. But yeah, there's external people, coming in that, you know, pretend to be one thing and they're not. And so it's good to make sure you keep yourself surrounded by people that want to see you succeed and will help you get there. And, you know, if you have to make a sacrifice, that they're going to pick up the slack for you.
Right.
You know, because you can't do everything alone. You know, that's the other thing.
Right. What were your coaches and your team like when you were competing? Do you think you could have been as successful on your own or without the team?
You need a team. Yeah. You absolutely need a team. And so it goes with everything that you're doing, whether it's in business or sports or whatever, you know, you can't do everything by yourself.
Right.
So surround yourself by people that will help you. And, you know, my coaches were amazing. I had the best ski technician in the world, Heinz. He literally was just as invested in my success as I was. I mean, when I won, he would cry, you know.
That's beautiful.
It was great. And, you know.
Did you cry too?
I cried because he was crying. It was like a thing. I'm like, Heinz, why are you crying? You're making me cry. And you know, he was so nervous when I crashed and you know, like it just feels really good to know that someone's that invested in what you're doing and they're putting just as much effort into what they're doing to make you succeed as you are.
Yeah.
It's just like me working in the gym, you know, he's in the ski room tuning my skis for hours on end. And a lot of people don't know that about ski racing. It's your equipment is a huge part of your success. So if I didn't have him, if I didn't have my coaches, if I didn't have my physical therapist, Lindsay Winninger, who helped me get back from all my injuries, you know, if I didn't have like all of those people, I couldn't do what I did.
Right.
So
team is everything. What's the greatest lesson your coach taught you?
It was my coach from Minnesota, the 96-year-old. He said, well, I think it was like 10 or 11, he said, I'm fast the way I am, so don't change it. Because a lot of people at that time in my career try to change my technique.
Mm-hmm.
And even my dad was like, you know, this isn't, she's not going to succeed if she stays like this. And he's like, no, this is her natural talent. Stay with what you have. Don't try to be someone else. You know, you're fast the way you are. And so I kind of, you know, morph that into life as well. You know, it's like you are who you are, and that's what makes you special. So stick with it.
That's beautiful. That's a good lesson.
Right?
It's a beautiful lesson. Yeah. And how do you deal now, and how did you deal with negative thoughts? Did they fester for a while? Did you have a technique that allowed you to get out of it into more positivity? What did you do?
I mean, I think journaling helped, you know. Honestly, like skiing was the best outlet for me.
It's therapy, huh?
Yeah, and which was why it was so hard to retire, you know. Which is why then, you know, COVID, sitting there with your thoughts, not ideal, but ended up being great. Yeah, I mean, I think social media was at times really difficult, you know, because other people would say negative things about me and that would kind of creep in. And I wouldn't necessarily always believe it, but it's still kind of, it's like there, you know, it's like a little mosquito and it's like,
annoying.
Do people actually think that about me, you know, and it kind of adds a little bit of doubt in there. And it's not always the easiest to get rid of those negative thoughts, but I try to focus on, again, like what makes me happy? Why am I doing this? I'm not doing it for other people, I'm doing it for myself.
Yeah.
And you know, everyone's gonna judge you. Everyone's gonna, there's always gonna be people that say bad things about you, but you know, when the lights are off and you go to bed, you know, it's just you. And are you happy with yourself? And I think that's the ultimate question. And if you can be happy with that, then you're good. Who cares what anyone else thinks?
Amen to that. There's a great speech by Matthew McConaughey where he talks about his hero is 10 years away from him. He's always chasing his hero. When he won the Oscar, I think it was, he said, I'm always chasing my hero who's 10 years away from me. We talked about your 10-year-old self. You've had a couple of years to transition now. I'm curious, in 10 years from now, where do you see yourself being, and what advice do you wish your 10-year away self would give you right now?
I have no idea where we'll be in 10 years. Like, I don't know where we'll be in 10 days.
I know, it's crazy.
I really like not knowing it. You know, I used to really try to, I'm a planner, and I like organizing and like knowing what's going to happen and like planning as far out as I can.
You're always scheduled. You got events, you got training.
It's always a schedule. And I kind of really like not having as like, you know, as tight of a schedule as I used to have.
Yeah.
And so I don't know. I have no idea. I mean, hopefully I'll have kids and, you know, 10 years is a long time. You know, I'm 36 and that's, you know, I don't know. But I know that I have a lot more to do, and that's really exciting.
What do you think advice you would want to hear from your 46-year-old self?
I think the same as, you know, when you ask me what would I tell my 10-year-old or 16-year-old self, I wouldn't say anything.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And it's your last chance to get more fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this limited-time bundle ends June 30th. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
The path to retirement is different for everyone. And as life changes, so do priorities. Fidelity can help you get where you want to go. With a free personalized plan, goal tracking, and timely insights, you'll be set to take on retirement, whether you're saving for it or already living in it. Get started at fidelity.com/takeon. Expenses charged by your investments and other costs and fees associated with trading or transacting in your account apply. Fidelity Brokerage Services member NYSE SIPC.
Because I have to have those experiences and I'm excited for them, you know, good or bad. I think, you know, it's just a part of the journey. And so far it's been great. So I feel like...
just keep it one day at a time.
You know, keep it one day at a time. Keep it simple.
And when do you feel the most loved? When you're doing what?
hanging out with my dogs. Yeah, they love me no matter what.
That's
the best feeling ever.
Isn't it incredible?
That's why I have three. I'm the crazy dog lady.
Oh my God, it's not crazy. Well, I have one cat, so I'm the crazy cat dude.
Oh, yes, that's where I draw the line.
Because I travel so much.
And cut.
She's a good cat. She just relaxes. She's like a little dog. She like lays next to me. She just like purrs on me.
I think I'm scarred from my mom's cats. They're
crazy cats. No, yeah. You need a chill cat. You need a cat that's like a dog. That like plays fetch and
No. Yeah, so my dogs are the best. Like, nothing like, well, you know, having a Ben and Jerry's with my three dogs, watching Law & Order.
The pizza.
Ideal.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, that's when I feel the best.
What is something about yourself that you're most proud of that most people don't know about?
I don't know. I feel like everyone knows everything about me. Sometimes way too much. that I'm most proud of. I don't know. I'm most proud of my family. Just like, you know, I think I'm really lucky to have, you know, siblings that are, you know, as great as they are. And, you know, I'm really proud of, you know, where everyone's, how far everyone's gone. And I mean, I guess that has nothing to do with me, but at the same time, I don't know. I feel like we're all a unit. So yeah. I'm proud of them.
Oh, beautiful. Yeah. What about your biggest fear right now?
I mean, I had a lot more of them a couple months ago, but I feel like...
What were they a couple months ago?
Well, you know, I hadn't really processed, like, you know, retirement.
Yeah.
So I guess now I'm just kind of happy not knowing what's going to happen, you know, where I was a little bit nervous, you know, what was going to happen before, like, you know, where's my career going, you know, what's life, what's going to, you know, just because, you know, as much as I have things planned, nothing's really planned.
Right.
So I don't know.
And your fears now?
I don't know. I guess it's similar to skiing. Like, I try not to think about any, like, I never had fear when I was skiing. And I think I'm finally in a place where I'm, like, very present in the moment.
That's
and
beautiful.
I'm not thinking about, you know, what could go wrong. I'm thinking about what opportunities are there.
That's beautiful. And what is the question you wish more people would ask you, but they don't ask you?
How are you doing?
How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm great. Thank you. Good. How are you?
People don't ask you that enough?
But like, in a general way, like,
yeah.
You know, it's like, how are you feeling?
Mm.
Like, I don't know. People, it's like, there's greetings. We're like, hey, what's up? You know, how's it going? But it's like, actually, how are you feeling?
Mm.
Like, are you happy? You know what I mean? Like, I have a few people that say that, and those are my friends.
Not many people ask you how you're feeling.
No.
Again, next time I'm at an event and you're by yourself, I know what to do.
Exactly.
I know what to ask you.
You know the tips.
I'm coming up to you. I'm going to ask you how you're feeling.
I'm pretty simple.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think those are really important things.
Who is the person in your family that has taught you the biggest lesson? I'm sure they've all taught you something, but what's a lesson that really
stands out? I mean, everyone's taught me something. I think, you know, my grandfather and my dad taught me, you know, about toughness and, you know, what it really means to, you know, sacrifice and work hard. And I think those are incredible traits that, you know, not a lot of people have. And like, I have a really good understanding of what it means to sacrifice.
Mm.
Because they had such a great example for me.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think my sister, Karin, really kind of has been, she's just helped me be like a person.
Mm.
And that's
a human being.
Yeah. I'm like, that's been great.
Not the athlete and not the competitor or the personality.
Right. And that's the one thing I love about my family, which, you know, is why I talk about them so much, is just because I'm always me, you know, so. Yeah. They always, you know, doesn't matter what I do, I'm always, you know, going to be me, and they always treat me like that. And it's just kind of nice to always have that to go back to.
What was that like coming from such a small, I guess, Midwest town, or I guess Northwest town, but I think of Minnesota as a Midwest.
Midwest,
town.
Yeah.
I'm from Ohio, sure. So I think of it as all.
Ohio.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah.
We had little bunny hills that I'd ski sometimes when I was a kid. What was it like transitioning from small town, you know, Midwest values into the spotlight and into the scene and into everything that comes with that? How did you stay grounded?
I think there are moments where I kind of like, you know, especially when I was like 18, 19, where I didn't really, 20, and kind of got into the hype a little bit.
You did get into it a little bit.
A little bit. And then, you know, my family was like, this isn't
doing?
You.
Chill out.
Yeah, like, what are you doing?
Like, just because you went to two Olympics doesn't mean anything.
Doesn't mean you're anything special. And so, again, like, you know, family kind of always has been the equalizer. And I always go back to Wisconsin and see my relatives. And it's like, and we just had like a big celebration for my grandma's 90th birthday. And, you know, like, everything's the same. We're in the garage celebrating, you know.
Playing cornhole, wake surfing.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. Right? Definitely cornhole.
Yeah.
S'mores.
Oh, it's amazing.
Must.
It's the best.
Yeah, so it's just, you know, that's normal for me, and so I don't ever get, I don't know, I don't, that's
external. You don't let Hollywood take over.
Yeah, that's something else.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Sounds like a good life. This is a question I ask people towards the end of the interviews. It's called the three truths. So
this sounds really intimidating. I'm scared.
So it's a hypothetical question. Okay. So I'd like you to imagine, how'd you imagine your childhood, your older self? I'd like you to imagine that many years away from now, it's your last day on earth. And you get to live and accomplish and do everything you want to do. All the ups and downs and the beauty of life. You get to live as old as you want to be. But then eventually, it's got to be your last day.
Yeah.
Hypothetical.
Okay, so it's your last day.
It's your last day. You've accomplished everything.
Yeah.
But for whatever reason, all of the words that you've said, all the content, this interview, your books, anything you create,
yeah,
goes away.
Yeah.
Goes to the next place. So
okay.
No one has access to your information anymore.
Okay. So you're blank slate.
Blank slate.
Okay.
No one's got your message to the world.
Okay.
If you could leave three lessons behind, and this is all we would have to remember you by, three lessons.
Wow, I call it really intense.
You know, it's three called the School of Greatness, Lindsay. It's not School of Average.
Oh, wow.
If you had three lessons you could leave behind, I call it three truths.
Yeah.
Based on what's on your heart right now, what would be those three truths?
I don't know. Always stay true to yourself. Like, never give up on your dreams, which is cheesy, but very true. And I don't know. Third one. I don't know. I feel like maybe you can't make anyone else happy. You can only make yourself happy.
That's so true.
That's a good one.
You can't make anyone else happy.
Yeah.
Did you have to learn that the hard way?
Yes, I did. I've had,
really?
Yep, many times. Yep. It's, I cannot make anyone else happy, no matter what I do or how hard I try. So I can only make myself happy. And I can make someone else happier, but I can't make someone happy.
I think I saw Will Smith share a quote about this recently. He was like, happiness, I think he was talking about his wife, happiness is her responsibility.
Yeah.
I can contribute
correct
to the happiness.
I've seen that one.
But
yes,
it's not my responsibility to make someone happy.
Yes, exactly.
It's my responsibility to make me happy, theirs to make them.
Yeah, which seems like really kind of narcissistic in a way,
right.
But it's true, because if you don't know who you are and like you don't know what makes you happy, like how are you supposed to make someone else happy? It's like you have to focus on yourself. And if everyone focuses on making themselves happy, like we'll be a lot better.
I feel like up until recently, I have been in the pattern my entire life of wanting to please and make others happy.
Yeah.
Especially
it's
like
really
in,
hard pattern to get out of.
In intimate relationships and close dynamics. And it hasn't been up until recently when I've started to really not abandon myself in those settings, make sure I stand up for what I want, say what I need to say, and not just
boundaries,
give in and do something to make someone else happy.
Yeah.
Because I've done that my entire life up until recently. And I tell you what, it's exhausting trying to live that way.
It's very exhausting.
It's exhausting, right, Lindsay?
Very exhausting.
What made you realize
yes
that that's one of your truths? When did you realize, like, okay, this is...
I mean, trial and error.
Yeah. Do you feel like you were that way in multiple?
The hard way.
Do you feel like you were like that with family or intimate relationships and business?
With
or
a
just,
lot of things.
Really?
I think, you know, personal stuff, but also like, you know, with media stuff, like I had to learn to say no. Like, I can't please everybody.
Right.
I can't do everything that everybody wants me to do. I can't physically sign every autograph, even though it kills me when I see little kids. And I'm like, I literally physically have to go to the start right now. I can't.
You have
I literally
focus.
Have to race. I literally cannot sign your autograph.
That's tough.
And that's really hard, but that's the reality. And, you know, I can't live my life, you know, upset that I didn't do something or I didn't make somebody happy or one person doesn't like me or, you know what I mean? You can't live your life that way.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, sometimes it really ate at me. And,
really?
Yeah, but now it's like, you know, I can only do what I can do.
Right.
You know, I can't do more than that. And I can't make other people happy, again, to the point.
Right. How have you learned how to disappoint people and be okay with it? Because I feel like I'm going to need to learn how to just be comfortable.
If I'm not disappointed in myself, like if I'm, if I can, again, turn the lights off, go to sleep by myself and say, I did the best I could today, then that's what it is.
What if you disappoint millions of people? How do you feel?
I mean, it sucks.
Right.
But that's, you made a mistake and you got to live with it and just own it. Or, you know, people just don't like you.
Right.
But if, you know, if it's like something that you really believe in, then that's what it is.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you can't change who you are. You can't change what you think or, you know what I mean? It's like, some people, you know, no matter how polarizing, have opinions, and you know, as long as that's what you believe and you're true to it, then that's, you know, who am I to judge someone else's opinion? That's the thing. I never judge anyone else. Like, you know, no matter what it is, whatever you believe, that's you. I'm not going to criticize that. I don't know.
What would you say has been the biggest emotional challenge for you to overcome in your life? From, you talked about kind of depression and mental health. Mm-hmm. Is it people pleasing? Is it staying true to yourself emotionally? Is it trusting yourself? What's been the biggest emotional challenge?
I think people pleasing.
Really?
Yeah.
You've been like me your entire life too?
Working on myself. Yeah. Because I'm selfish when it comes to skiing, because you have to be focused on yourself in order to make gains and to be in that position. But, you know, I was very selfless when it came to, you know, other people around me and like wanting them to be happy. And that takes a lot of energy, and it's very draining. It's
exhausting.
So
why do you think people live in that way? In that space, like, why do you think me and you have done that, and others tend to do that?
I think that's a question for Dr. Mondo. I think I need to call him after this. I'm like, what is the answer to this question? I don't know. I've always been like that. You know, I'm the oldest of five. I always try to take care of my siblings. I change all their diapers. Like, you know, I help when I can. I try to make everybody happy. And I don't know. It's
so tough.
It's like something you gotta ask Dr. Mondo. Like,
I'll ask
some psychologist, because that's a deep question. I don't have the answer for.
I will ask him. I've got one final question for you, and a statement. Before I share the statement and ask the question, I want people to follow you, because I love your content over on social media. So check out Lindsay Vaughn with two N's. Around social media. You got lindsaybond.com as well, right? Or what's your website?
I don't really use .com anymore.
Your website,
but it's it's there.
Gotcha. But social media is your main thing.
Yeah,
is it like Instagram or Twitter or Facebook? Which one do you use most?
Probably Instagram the most, all those platforms. I'm not really on TikTok.
We got to get you on there.
I feel like I'm too old. I don't know.
I'm 38 and I'm on TikTok.
Oh, come on.
The generation is getting older,
bad,
you know?
Okay. Yeah.
Remember when Facebook was just for college kids?
There's so many platforms.
It's nuts.
It's really overwhelming.
But you got a great team, don't you?
I do it all myself.
Oh, you got to build your team.
Everything I do.
Just like you had
in
sports.
That's not me. That's not authentic. This is me. This is everything that's on there. That's all me.
Of course. But you can have team support you. Just like everything
on
there.
I don't trust anybody. So what if they mess it up?
Everything on the slopes is all you. But you had a team to support you with tuning the skis and doing this and making your schedules good.
Yeah, but would I have my team come in here and do an interview for me?
No, so
I got you there.
So you can still post your content and take the content that you want to do, but make sure they support you in other ways.
That's actually an extra step. It's actually an extra step.
Okay.
It's easier for me to post it than to send it to somebody.
I get it.
You know what I mean?
I get it.
It's like, and also, it's like, what's the point? I say what I want to say.
Very authentic.
It's my pictures. Yeah.
It's very authentic. Very inspiring.
It's just me. If you want to follow me, great. If not, I'm sure there's a lot of people out there. There's millions of people.
It's great. And you got a book coming out next year, early next year, which I'm excited to share out as well. So be on the lookout for that. People can pre-order it hopefully soon. I don't know if they can pre-order it now.
I don't think they can now. But
in a few months, I think
they'll
be able to.
Pretty soon, yeah. It's called Rise.
It's called Rise. It's going to be inspiring about all these lessons and more.
Yes. I really should have talked to you before all the book.
But I'm assuming you're sharing a lot of these insights and more philosophies and stories and lessons, right?
Yeah, it's kind of like all of the things that I've experienced in my life and what it taught me and like how I overcame it and kind of, you know, like more of the mental side of it. And
that's cool.
It's meant to be, you know, inspiring, because, you know, we all face obstacles and, you know, we all have to overcome certain things. And so, yeah, my life as a roller coaster written down.
It's beautiful. Beautiful. It's exciting. So when that comes out, make sure you guys pre-order that. My statement, Lindsay, is I want to acknowledge you for a moment for the incredible life you've had up until now, for the ups and downs, and for being so mentally and emotionally tough to continue to show up for your dreams, even when you had so many injuries. I've been surgeries and injuries myself, and I know how hard it is sometimes to come back after the first time, but then after 30 times, for you to keep showing up for your dreams and for your heart is so beautiful and inspiring. And also for you to know when it's time to transition, I think it's inspiring as well, even if you didn't maybe want to. But showing up authentically where you're at now, healing in the process of the transition, being a positive force for your fans, your followers, and your family, which is most important, it's really inspiring to meet you, to connect with you, and to hear about these stories and kind of know more about your life. So I acknowledge you for all this that you've created and accomplished. And I'm excited to see what you create moving forward. And when I'm at an event that you're at, I know exactly what
come
I'm going to do.
Hi.
Come right up.
I'm nice.
I'm going to ask you, how are you feeling? How are you feeling, Lindsay?
Thank you. Yes, that'd be great.
Yes.
Look forward to it.
I'm very excited. My final question, what is your definition of greatness?
My definition of greatness is like overcoming all obstacles. I mean, I think the greatness isn't just, you know, a perfect run on a perfect day. You know, it's when you're at your absolute limit and, you know, you're scratching and clawing to get to the finish and, you know, you make it and you push yourself past where you, you know, think you could ever go.
Right.
Because, you know, like Tom Brady, you know, his best, he always says, like, his best performance isn't, you know, winning this or that Super Bowl. There's, like, certain moments where he felt like he overcame a lot. And those are like, really great moments. Mm-hmm. And again, to each his own. So not everyone has the same experience, and everyone's greatness is different. But
yeah, it's beautiful. Were you in Greatness Code also?
Yes, I was.
That's
so
right.
Many greatness.
That's right. That's because I remember.
So many greatness.
Well, I remember that story from that, of Tom Brady talking about that. I was like, oh, I think you were in that too. Yeah,
yeah.
It was a great series.
Yeah. I always watch stuff like that because I think it's
so cool.
Yeah, it's really cool to see and to hear. And, you know, again, everyone has their own experiences, and it's interesting to learn from that.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it's all very inspirational.
Love it. Lindsay Vaughn, thank you for being here.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Yep. My friend, thank you so much for being here and for listening to this episode. I hope you found it inspiring. Lindsay's message, her lessons, her stories are inspiring to me, and it's so cool to see what she's been able to create in her career and also what she's doing now in the different stage of her career as well. And if you enjoyed this, make sure to share this with a few friends. You can text a few friends. You can post it on social media. You can post it wherever you like. Use the link lewishouse.com/1132 or just copy and paste the link on any platform that you're listening to this podcast. Also, if this is your first time here, then welcome to the School of Greatness. We've got over 1,100 incredible episodes with some of the biggest names in the world. Make sure to click the subscribe button right now on Apple Podcasts so you can stay up to date on the latest and greatest right here on the School of Greatness. And leave us a review over on Apple Podcasts. I'd love to hear your biggest takeaway from today's episode with Lindsay by leaving us a review over on Apple Podcasts. And I want to leave you with this quote from Jeffrey Fry, who said, "The difference between champions and everyone else is that champions are never afraid of losing, while everyone else is afraid of winning." Whoo, man, that's a good one. And I remember playing sports my entire life, and you could feel it. The ones that were playing not to lose always did. The ones that played to win sometimes lost, but they gave it their all, and they won most of the time. So make sure you're going out there every single day playing to win. Don't be afraid if you fail, because it's only just feedback helping you get more information to move forward the next day. I appreciate you, and I want to remind you, if no one has told you lately that you are loved, you are worthy, and you matter. And you know what time it is. It's time to go out there and do something great.
At Metro, get an iPhone 12 with 5G and a dual camera system for $99.99. Take amazing pictures and share them instantly, and don't put up with life's yada yada.
Yada.
Like photo bombers. Zoom, crop out,
yada yada,
and bye.
You don't take yada yada in life, don't take yada yada from your wireless provider. Get iPhone 12 with 5G with no activation fees and nada yada yada. Only at Metro by T-Mobile. Switch Metro, bring your ID. This offer isn't available for customers currently at T-Mobile or that have been with Metro in the past 180 days.